For those of you who are not aware of New Vrindavan's history, there's a small temple just down the road, about 4 miles. It's again about a 100-year-old farmhouse. Prabhupada called it Bahulaban. Bahulaban is one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan. There was a cow named Bahula, and that cow had a small calf. A tiger came to eat the cow, and the cow very honestly said, "You can eat me, but first let me go and take care of my calf. Then you can come, then I will come back." So the tiger, seeing the motherly affection of the cow, permitted her to feed her calf if she came back immediately. And because of her, she came back. She wasn't concerned with her own life. She was only concerned with the life of her calf. And that tiger, seeing the motherly compassion of the cow, his heart transformed, and he became a devotee. Actually honored and worshipped Bahula. So from that time it is called Bahulavan. This is an important story, because if we are honest and compassionate, we can change people's hearts. Bahula was not a learned scholar. She was a simple mother, but was honest and had compassion. Recently, there was a wonderful festival here at New Vrindavan, and it was called the Festival of Inspiration. Were any of you here for that? Ah, so many. Were you inspired?
No.
Just before that, there was annual meeting of the leaders of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness from all over America, Canada, and Mexico. And these devotees all came together in very, very wonderful unity to discuss how to overcome obstacles and how to really live according to Srila Prabhupada's dream of how Krishna consciousness should be practiced and how it should be spread throughout the world. So just after that was Festival of Inspiration. And many, many of the very, very exalted leaders of the Hare Krishna movement were present, giving classes, seminars, kirtans, darshans. It was very nice. New Vrindavan is still recovering from having to serve so many exalted personalities. During that time, during a class, I was asked to give in the morning. I narrated a very special, significant induction that I heard from Srila Prabhupada. I would like to repeat it for all of you today, with your permission. I was listening to a tape. Srila Prabhupada was in Australia. Therein, a young lady who was in college was introduced to him. She was working on her thesis for a PhD. The thesis was entitled, "How Indian Gurus Have Affected Western Society." So She came to interview Srila Prabhupada on this particular subject. She had her notepad, perhaps tape recorder. And she asked Prabhupada that question. Can you give your comments on how Indian gurus have affected Western culture? Prabhupada replied, "What is your culture?" She wasn't expecting to answer questions. She was expecting to ask questions. But Prabhupada asked her, "What is this culture? Is it culture that innocent animals are being slaughtered wholesale by the millions? Is that culture? Answer me." So she tried to give an answer. Prabhupada said, "You are Christian. It is a Christian society. Christian means to follow Jesus. Lord Jesus Christ said, 'Thou shalt not kill.' So why are you killing so many animals? Because he preached, 'Thou shalt not kill,' they killed him. And still this killing business is going on." And he was challenging her. Why is this happening? You are a Christian lady. Why so many slaughterhouses? Why innocent beings are being tortured and killed? And this went on for quite a long time. I'm summarizing. She wanted to change the subject. So she said to Prabhupada, "Can I ask you, sir, a philosophical question?" Prabhupada's reply really shook my heart. And for those who are earnestly seeking Prabhupada's mercy through following his will, it should shake all of our hearts. She asked him, "Can I ask you a philosophical question?" Prabhupada's reply, "Are you ready?" Prabhupada's reply was, "Philosophy has no value without proper behavior. Philosophy has no value without proper behavior." What is the use of talking? We should speak with our actions. And this is what all of our beloved predecessors have taught. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he declared in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that one cannot understand the essence and conclusion of the Vedas even by studying the Vedas life after life after life. One can understand the real purport of the scriptures by examining the activities and character of a pure devotee of the Lord. Their activities are the conclusions and the essence of all knowledge. In our beloved Srila Prabhupada, he had the most profound philosophy that could defeat all atheism, agnosticism, Mayavadism, voidism. He had a philosophy based on the authority of the most ancient scriptures that were logical, scientific, and practical. But what induced the devotees to take Prabhupada's philosophy into their heart? It was his character, his behavior. They saw in Srila Prabhupada a pure lover of God, a person who had no personal ambitions, no envy, no pride, a person who was simply living in compassion toward them in his love for Krishna. They trusted him. And when they heard him speak, they understood that whatever he's saying, he is. They wanted to participate. They surrendered their lives because they had faith in him. Srila Prabhupada instructed all of his followers, do as I am doing. We cannot be Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was most specially blessed, empowered, divine associate of Lord Sri Krishna. But Lord, Mahabharata explains, Mahajano yena katasa bandha. We should follow in the footsteps of great souls. So Srila Prabhupada was very much concerned that devotees live with the proper service attitude, with proper moral conduct, with humility. These qualities equal devotion. When someone asked Prabhupada, how do we know who is your follower? Prabhupada gave a very simple answer. You will know who is really my father because they are perfect ladies and gentlemen. Now, ladies and gentlemen is not Sanskrit terminology. Vaishnav is Sanskrit terminology. But a person who's really a Vaishnav is, by Western calculation, what they could actually perceive by their value, a perfect lady and gentleman. Humble, honest, selfless servant. Self-controlled. All of these qualities naturally ornament one who is actually close to Krishna. So if we become very result-oriented in our devotional attempts, but we neglect individually and collectively emphasizing and cultivating the qualities of Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, then we will not really make an impact in a positive spiritual way in our societies, either in our Krishna conscious society or in the society at large. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes tell us that you'll become perfect if you simply have complete faith that I have not come to cheat you. This is a world of cheaters and cheated. People have a very difficult time actually putting the trust of their heart in another. Because, usually in due course of time, your heart is broken. Jiva jiva sajivanam. One living being is food for another living being. Or as they say, it is a dog-eat-dog world. A human being is supposed to come above dogs. Actual human civilization is based on the principle of uniting in devotion to Krishna, to God. So the way we relate to others, we should be very, very careful, should be in such a way that our motive is actually to serve, not to exploit. When a devotee actually has that sincere attitude to serve without private agendas, without ulterior motives, then naturally people will learn to trust that devotee. Srila Prabhupada explained that our movement is based on love and trust. To the degree we could all live in such a way that people can not just superficially but actually trust us, we will have a very powerful, strong society. It is not just a matter of speaking high philosophy or high leelas, because anyone can speak that. Anyone can learn those things. The real thing is, what is our character? What is our qualities? What is our surrender? What is our humility, our compassion, our real attachment to the holy name, to the Vaishnavas, and to service? These are the qualities that attract Krishna, not just memorization. Because memorization can also bring about false pride. You know the story of Vasudev, the leper from Kurukshetra. When Lord Chaitanya went on his South Indian tour, in Kurukshetra he met Kurma Brahman. He met him at the deity of Kurmadev. Kurmadev is a deity of Krishna, who appeared as a tortoise long ago, at the time of the churning of the ocean of milk. Krishna is so merciful. The demigods were on one side of the mountain, and the Mount Sumeru, yes? Golden mountain. And the demons and demigods churning Vasuki with, he was rope. The mountain was turning, it was sinking. It was sinking to the bottom of the ocean. And they couldn't do anything to sustain it. So they cried out, Krishna, Krishna, Vishnu, Vishnu, save us, save us, save us. So Vishnu answers the calls of his devotees. He appeared as a gigantic tortoise and laid under the mountain, supported. So to this day, people worship Kurmadev to give support to our devotional service, because that is his special leela, to give support in his devotee's bhakti. So when Lord Chaitanya was at the Kurma temple, he was dancing, 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 and singing, and crying, and ecstasy. And hundreds of people from all the neighboring villages came there, just seeing his beautiful golden complexion, hearing his sweet singing, seeing the transformations of love upon his body. They were all transfixed, transformed, and converted to love Krishna. They didn't even need any philosophy. Lord Chaitanya's dance included everything that is to be known. The power of the holy name. Have any of you been to Kurukshetra? It's a very special place. You went for yatra? It's a very small place. Actually, it's a big temple, but very small, quaint villages surrounding it. So after the Lord performed his dance, this Brahmin invited him to his home. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased to accept Kurma Brahman's devotional offerings. He washed his feet. Then he sprinkled the water on his own head and on his family's heads. Then they all drank it. He offered him a sitting place. said, I am so fortunate. Today, my life, my family, my wealth, my everything has become perfect because you have accepted our offerings by entering into my home. Brahma, Shiva, and the greatest of the demigods, they perform such austerities, and they never get a glimpse of your lotus feet. But today, those same lotus feet have entered right into my home. He was so grateful. This is a essential principle of a Vaishnava, gratitude. A heart that is not grateful cannot accommodate Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy is coming. It is descending. If our heart is grateful, then it is receptive to digest that mercy. Without gratitude to Krishna, without gratitude to those persons who in any time of our life have ever helped us come closer to Krishna, our heart is hard. It cannot assimilate the mercy of the Lord. So Kurma Brahman expressed his gratitude from his heart. And then he said to Lord Chaitanya that, please fulfill my desire. That I am suffering the torment of the continuous waves of misery that are in this ocean of family life. I desire to leave it all behind and go with you wherever you go. Now, for most sannyasis, they would be very happy if someone said like this. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became grave. He said, don't speak such nonsense ever again. He said, you stay home. You take care of your family. You perform your occupation. You always chant the holy names. You read Bhagavad Gita and teach it to others. In this way, your life will be perfect. If you just live by these principles of humbly chanting the holy names and hearing and speaking Srimad Bhagavat and Gita to others, he said, we will never be separate. I will always be living within your home. So the next day, Lord Chaitanya left in the morning, and Kurma Brahman still was going with him. Lord Chaitanya said, go home. So after the Lord left, there was a Brahmin named Vasudev. This Vasudev, he was afflicted with such severe case of leprosy that there were living worms eating his flesh by the millions. Now most of us, if we had worms eating our flesh, we would go to a doctor to remove them. Actually, in my own life, I didn't have anything like that, but something that I'll tell you. No, I won't tell you. We should keep the subject transcendental. Huh? No. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and the Vasudev, who had this leprosy, he was so eager to meet the Lord. He was so humble. He was so selfless, beyond human comprehension. When one of those thousands of worms would fall from his body, he would very carefully pick it up and put it back in his body. Because he was thinking that this body is a home for the worms, just like it's a home for me. He was thinking himself lower than the worm. Now, please do not try to imitate that, because you will not survive. Either you have that realization or you don't. If you don't, which you don't, or shall I say we don't, We should just honor that and understand the spirit of selfless, humble service and try to follow in the footsteps of that line. So he, when he heard Lord Chaitanya was in Kurumakshetra, he went to that place. But when he arrived, Lord Chaitanya was gone. So Lord Chaitanya, knowing that the Kurma Brahman was weeping, feeling that his life was a failure, that he missed this blessed opportunity, the Lord actually turned around and went all the way back to Kurumakshetra to meet him. And when he saw the Vasudev leper who had pus and blood and all kinds of fungus-type infections all over his skin, oozing, the Lord embraced him. And when he embraced him, his body became perfectly healthy. His complexion became like resplendent gold. And Vasudev said, I can understand you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because who else is so merciful that he would touch me? No one would even, just the fragrance of my body, no one would even come near me. What to speak of look at me, what to speak of touch me, but you embraced me. Therefore you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one else can have this compassion, can have this love. And then he prayed to the Lord, please protect me. Now that you have cured me of leprosy by making my body so beautiful, don't let me become proud. Because if pride enters my heart, my devotional spirit will be lost. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya taught Trinadapi Sunichena Taror Ivasihishna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadad. This particular sloka has been repeated perhaps unlimited times by the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, because it is the sacred principle that makes us dear to Krishna in whatever we do. Our humility, our tolerance, and our attachment to the chanting of the holy names. So these are the basic principles that devotees should share with one another and should demonstrate to the world. If we really have compassion or want to be instruments of our guru's compassion, we should understand how people are suffering without Krishna. Even people who are enjoying, how long will it last? What is the substance of their enjoyment? At the best, it's just sensual and mental. But we are the soul. The only happiness that could touch the heart, that could touch the real being, is the happiness of uniting with Krishna. That is what religion means, to bind back to God. Yoga means to reunite with God. Without that, all happiness is superficial shadow. So devotees lament. We see Srivas Thakur, Advaitacharya, they were weeping, crying. Haridas Thakur, they were weeping and crying, Lord, please come and deliver these people. And who are the people they were talking about? Wealthy people, scholarly people, who thought they were happy, who were celebrating festivals. But they were all materialistic. The devotees were crying, save them, Lord, save them. Their whole lives are being wasted without Krishna, without love for God. So if we really care, then we really want to make a difference in this world in a real, spiritually substantial way. That is the purpose of ISKCON. It's the person of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It's the purpose of religion, universally, to reach out to suffering people and bring them back into the loving service of the Supreme Lord, their eternal natural position. The age of Kali is a time of quarrel and hypocrisy. Even in the name of religion, we see so much hypocrisy. And people who are so-called religionists become either sentimentalists or fanatics. And religion, which is supposed to unite, creates deeper, further divisions. Because in this age of Kali, people use their identity and the facilities of religion not to purify their hearts, but to justify and even facilitate their false egos. I and mine. I am this body, and what is in relation to the body is mine. I am better than you. And how do I know? Because my religion is better than you. My guru is better than you. My austerities are higher than you. Mine. And what does that all come down to? I am better than you. But this is not the way the great acharyas have sung. Nowhere do we find any devotee saying, I'm better than anyone. Devotee is servant of everyone. May serve you by chastising you or defeating you, but always serving. Not in a superiority complex, but in a service attitude. Actually with the desire to help. To liberate. So if we really want this glorious of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, and Lord Sri Krishna, if we want Krishna's mercy to really have an impact on the world, we must all individually and collectively make sacrifices in our lives to live with such a type of Vaishnav behavior that devotees will have trust amongst each other and the world will see an example that they can actually put their faith in. That is very important. It is said if you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. So every devotee naturally thinks, who am I? I am so small. I'm just such a tiny little insect-like creature crawling around. What difference does it make what I do? But Krishna is so great. He could deliver the universe through an insect if the insect just agrees to be his instrument. Yes? So yes, we may be small, we may be insignificant, but the Supreme, Almighty, Absolute Personality of God, it happens to be in every one of our hearts. You wouldn't be seeing, hearing, or breathing if Super Soul was not in your heart. He's in the heart of the insignificant bacteria. And Krishna is just waiting to empower whoever we are. Whether we're illiterate, whether we can sing or not sing, whether we're good managers or not good managers, whether we're wealthy or poor, whether we're man or woman, Krishna's within your heart with all of his power, with all of his mercy, with all of his glory, and he wants to shine through you to help the world. Do you believe me? It is Krishna's words. And all that's required is that we're earnest, we're honest, we're sincere. Does this child have a question? Haribo. He's raising his hand, so I take that Krishna's using him as an instrument to tell me to stop speaking. I really appreciate so much this opportunity to be amongst all of you. Please take these words very seriously. Would anyone like to ask any questions on this or another subject? Mahaprabhuji,
Prabhu. In the morning class, it helped me chanting the common substance of everything is chanting the holy name of Lord. So how we should chant the holy name of Lord? Because we get afraid, because many people have chanted in the time of the Prabhupada also, they left the movement also. So what are the mistakes in the past we have committed, means devotees have committed, that they chanted the round, 16 rounds, or how they chanted, and whether we are just doing, completing 16 rounds, because we have given promise, we have to chant, and then how finish the round, and then, so when everything depends on chanting, then I will request if something we can get from you, so that we don't come into any mistakes.
Did everyone hear his question? Mahaprabhu Prabhu has inquired that we have seen in the past people have chanted the holy names and have later on fell away from the practice of devotional service. So how can we guard against falling away, and how can we understand the proper method of chanting? This can be analyzed from various points of view. From one point of view, Krishna tells in second chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita, Neha vikramanasosti pratyabhayo navityate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobaya. That any endeavor one makes on the spiritual path is never lost. It will protect us from the most dangerous type of fear. All of our material efforts are karmic. That means our activities are temporary and the results are temporary. If you perform a sinful activity, you will get a temporary reaction of suffering in due course of time. And if you perform a pious activity, you will get a temporary result of happiness in some form in due course of time. So everything in this world is temporary. But any act in Krishna's service is eternal. Because devotional service is the eternal natural energy of the soul to serve and love Krishna. So anything you do in Krishna consciousness is never lost. So in one sense, even if a person falls down, still, all the credits of one's devotional activities are there. But they are temporarily in storage. Something like cold storage. And we may not even be able to identify them. Even the world may not identify them. A person may fall down and live according to very degraded behavior. That means just like a dark cloud is just obscuring all the light of one's devotional accomplishments. And they cannot be seen by ourselves or others. But the cloud is temporary. And the light is there. The light is there to stay always, just waiting for more fuel to bring about its perfect illumination. So from that point of view, we should know that all of these personalities, by coming and chanting Hare Krishna, they are not unfortunate. They are supremely fortunate because they have acquired such rare spiritual credits in their lives. At the same time, we understand that they are unfortunate because they have such a sacred, special, rare opportunity in this one life to attain perfection. And they've come so far, and yet they're wasting so much time. One of my dear godbrothers, who was one of the senior devotees here at New Vrindavan, he served Prabhupada very nicely. And later on, even during Prabhupada's Leela in this world, this devotee fell away from devotional practices and engaged in many materialistic activities. And Prabhupada wrote a letter to him in his fallen state. He said, because you chanted Hare Krishna one time sincerely in Vrindavan, Krishna will deliver you. Hare Krishna. Now this devotee, many years later, after being away from active devotional service, he got cancer. He was suffering very, very acutely. And in that state, he just understood that Krishna and Prabhupada are just taking me back home, back to Godhead. And he completely surrendered his life to Prabhupada and Krishna. Completely took shelter of the holy name and the Vaishnavas. He was so humble, so gentle, so sincere. Just wanted to hear about Krishna day and night. Now one day I was with him and he looked at me and he started to cry. He said, I do not mind that I'm going to die any day. I do not mind that my body is wrecked with agonizing pain. But there is one thing that's breaking my heart. I could have done so much for Prabhupada in my life, but due to my weak-heartedness, I didn't do it. He became perfect because he performed sincere devotional service. Krishna saved him. So he went back to Godhead. There's no doubt in my mind that Prabhupada took him. So what he did doesn't really matter when you're in the spiritual world with Krishna. But he lamented that he wasted time. He could have done so much for so many people. And that is unfortunate. So how to avoid falling into the trap of Maya? Prabhupada's given us his books because there's danger at every step in this material world. Unless we're very intelligently aware of what material nature is, what bhakti is, what Krishna is, what the spirit soul is, what the three modes of material nature are, then we can easily fall into traps. Because Maya's traps sometimes look like the most comfortable, shelter-giving abodes. For materialistic people, Maya just very grossly gets them with all kinds of sinful devices. But for a devotee, she'll appear in such a way that's so pleasing, that even looks spiritual. Yes? Do you know how hunters catch animals? They make nets that look just like the grass, so you can't see it. How does fishermen catch fish? He puts bait, a worm or another fish, on a hook. And the fish doesn't see the hook. The fish only sees a nice worm going like this. Very enticing, very appetizing. And the fish, oh, how nice to see how providence is so benevolent today. Right in the pathway of my eyes is such a delicious feast to enjoy. And Maya is very clever. Maya doesn't show the hook even after it swallows, even after it bites. Because if you pull the hook, good fisherman doesn't pull the hook right away. Because then it'll just come right out of their mouth. They just, let it go, let them eat it. Yeah, so nice. And chews it, thoroughly chews it, then swallows it. Oh, how nice. And after it's fully swallowed in its belly, then the fisherman goes, what is this? But then it's too late. The hook is there. So that is the way the hunter, that is the way the fisherman catches its prey. Very cleverly, very deceiving. That's the way Maya catches devotees. Very deceiving. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted us to discuss, to read his books, and discuss very thoroughly amongst ourselves about this problem of Maya, to help protect each other. It's like if the fish was living in an ashram and the worm came, and very nice. And the fish's god brothers or god sisters would say, no, there's a hook in there, don't. It's Maya. No, it looks so nice. Yes, I read in the books that there's a fish in there. There's a hook in there. Don't take. So we must be intelligent, because there is danger at every step. And the greatest dangers are the offenses to the holy names. We should know the offenses, and we should guard against the offenses. And essentially, the real offenses are born when there's false pride. When we are egoistic, when we are proud, when we offend others, then Krishna no longer is pleased when we're chanting his names. If we're chanting the names, but Krishna is not pleased within his name, then what advancement are we going to make? Srila Prabhupada and our beloved Acharyas have given us a lifestyle by which, when chanting, we will please Krishna. Lord Chaitanya in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, he tells that if somebody is offending devotees, then when that person chants the holy name, Krishna in his name will punish him. Hare Krishna. Because Krishna is none different than his name. If Krishna is displeased with you, through his name he could punish you. Although the name is all merciful, but that's sometimes how the name shows its mercy. The name is all purifying. But Lord Chaitanya says we should wear this verse, string it on the name and wear it always. Krishna says there are two great enemies on the path of devotion: lethargy and pride, egotism. We have to be very aware of both of these. Lethargy means spiritual laziness. Laziness means to put priorities above Krishna's desires. To put priorities above our sadhana. to put priorities above our spiritual principles. There are people who work 10, 12, 14, 18 hours a day to make money. But from a spiritual point of view, they are lazy. They're sleeping all day, spiritually. So we should not become so passionate for material things that we do not have time for our devotional principles. That is a great danger. There was a very, very empowered manager within our movement who was really one of the great leaders. But he didn't have time to chant. And later on he lost his faith and fell away temporarily. And Prabhupada explained, it is because he neglected to chant the holy name. So we find that sometimes, even though people are chanting very sincerely, still, it's not that we do it one day and then we don't do it another day. There must be continuity. People gradually were distracted and stopped chanting attentively, stopped chanting according to their vows. And little by little, Maya just took them away. That is lethargy, great danger. And the other is egotism, that we commit offenses. When we commit offenses, Krishna is no longer pleased with our efforts. And out of his mercy, he takes away our taste, he takes away our intelligence, he takes away our strength to control our mind and senses, and we fall away. So if we're humble, and if we're attentive, then we are always protected by Krishna. And even if temporarily we have some difficulties, Krishna will pick us up and save us. Does that answer your question?
In Radha Gopinath Mandir, we have opportunity to devotee can sit together, chant together. But most of the people outside, they have to do their work. They have to somehow or accompany their round.
Actually, what you're saying should be seen in proper context. In Radha Gopinath Temple, the brahmacharis sit in circles and chant together. But 95% of the grihasthas chant at home. And they're just as Krishna conscious, just as dedicated, and just as pure. Because they take it seriously. You have been following Krishna consciousness for so many years. How often are you in the temple with the brahmacharis chanting? Maybe one day a week at the most. But because you make it a priority, and you're trying to cultivate a proper service attitude, therefore you're being protected and empowered. So if we have that opportunity from time to time to be with sadhus and to chant with them and hear from them, that will give us great strength, will give us great inspiration. The grihasthas are supposed to make their homes ashrams. Take that energy when we come to New Vrindavan. We take a spiritual energy and then we don't leave it here. We bring it home with us. It should energize our conviction, our determination in our household for more commitment to chant the holy names sincerely, attentive, according to discipline, according to Krishna's will, to live a pure life. Lord Chaitanya told Kurma Brahman, stay home with your family, but chant sincerely, hear Bhagavad Gita, and be compassionate to others. That's all that's required. We could all do that. But we must take it seriously. And there are various methods that may help us to be more attentive in chanting. And those methods can be very valuable. but really, what Krishna is listening to is our sincerity. Part of our sincerity is to pronounce the names correctly and to be hearing what we pronounce. But then we hear about Rupa Kaviraj. You've heard of him? He was chanting lakhs of rounds a day, or lakhs of names a day. Very attentively, at least appeared that way, attentively with his mouth. He was a profound scholar of Srimad Bhagavat. He was giving a lecture at Radhakund. He was actually a disciple of Mukunda, who was a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was a disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami. All living at Radhakund. Very, very. He was the Mahant. He was the man that people were coming to learn from. He was in the lineage. He had the scholarship. He was austere. But there was one Mataji, Krishnapriya. Yes? Krishnapriya Mataji. She was in his class, and her mouth was moving as he was speaking. She wasn't making sounds, but her mouth was moving. What is this? Why your mouth is moving? She said, I'm sorry, but because my father is Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, who is a disciple of Narottam Das Thakur, I've been taught to chant Hare Krishna from my baby state. So my mouth is always moving with the names of Krishna. I can't stop it. It's always doing like that. But actually, I'm listening to your class very attentively. And he became very angry on her. He chastised her. Nonsense. What is this? Why you're speaking like this? So because of his pride and his offense to this woman, he fell down. He got a terrible disease. He fell down from his spiritual disciplines. And he became a ghost after he died. And it is said, wherever people were offending Vaishnavas, that ghost would enter into them and harass them. Hare Krishna. So yes, we can do all nice techniques, which are important. But essentially, the name of Krishna, which is non-different than Krishna, is reciprocating with our sincerity, with our humility, with our dedication. And that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted to inculcate within our hearts. Is there any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
This question is on behalf of Sarvya Prabhu because of English problem. I'm speaking this question. This question is how to develop compassion in us.
By trying to assist those who have compassion. By trying to be an instrument of those who have compassion. Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, they have taught us how to be compassionate. If we just live by their direction, we can be instruments of their compassion. That is in terms of our activities. To just assist those who have compassion. That is how to gain compassion. And also compassion comes through real compassion, realization comes through purification. So for that we must carefully follow the principles. And ultimately we must take shelter of the holy names. If we take shelter of the holy names with this proper service attitude, then the natural, eternal compassion of the soul awakens. So these are the two principles. First of all, chant and hear very attentively, very sincerely, taking shelter of the name and the katha of the Lord to purify our hearts. And second of all, be the servant of those who have compassion. And live as a representative of their compassion. And Krishna will then awaken his compassion within our hearts. there another question? Yes, Mataji.
When you were talking about Prahlad Maharaj this morning, faith, how is it that he was able to develop such strong faith just by hearing the spiritual master within the world? Did it have to do with you that was he empowered, or is there something that we, some quality we can develop so that when we hear from a spiritual master, we can develop strong?
Obviously, Prahlad Maharaj was a very special soul from previous to this birth. Prahlad is a very intimate associate of the Lord. Otherwise, why would Narada Muni personally take so much trouble to preach to him? So he was a special soul. But Mahajano Yena Katasa Panta, the special souls teach us by their examples. Srila Prabhupada, what did he sacrifice to give us Krishna? We cannot sacrifice like Prabhupada, but we can follow in his footsteps. We may not be able to imitate Prahlad, but we can follow in his footsteps to earnestly, sincerely hear from our spiritual masters. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. To submit ourselves, to inquire submissively, and to render service. Prahlad Maharaj followed those principles to such a perfect state. Why? To teach us. We shouldn't think that because he's great, we can't do it. That defeats the whole purpose of his coming to earth. The great souls teach us by their example, because we may not be able to do it like them, but we can strive to do so. And then miracles take place. Prahlad Maharaj listened attentively to his guru. And so did his mother. But his mother, after she went back to Hiranyakashipu and his association, the mother forgot what Narada Muni spoke. But Prahlad remembered. He developed a pure attachment to his guru. He was faithful. He was chaste to the words of his guru. Yes? If you speak louder, then we can hear. The greatest problem in this world is spiritual poverty. If the people with money in this world became spiritually wealthy, then they would use all of their opulences for the benefit of humanity. But now, people with so much money are so spiritually bankrupt. They're just exploiting and usurping. And it's crippling our nation. The very fiber of the conscience of our nation is visibly being shaken. These scandals and the big multinational corporations, was Enron and WorldCom, something like that? Huh? These are multi-millionaires with great power. Really, what do they need in life? It's not that these men were like, you know, beggars on the street who robbed someone of a few rupees to feed their family because they would starve. These people are tremendously wealthy, tremendously prestigious, powerful. But even with all that, They're so crooked, so greedy, so envious in their hearts, that they're literally exploiting and ruining the lives of simple, poor people who have dedicated their lives to serving them. Cruelty. What does this mean? Spiritually, these men, morally, they're in utter poverty. What is the use of all their big, big, big money and fame and prestige and power? So that is the greatest disease in the world. Spiritual poverty. Physical poverty. Prabhupada told us we can give prasad. We can, grihasthas can give in charity in so many ways. But the real need of human society is enlightenment. If we enlighten the people who have little, they will be content and satisfied in any situation, remembering Krishna. If we enlighten the wealthy, then they're going to share whatever they have for the welfare of others. So this is the greatest need. There are so many institutions trying to reach out to poor people, but most of them are so corrupt. I will not mention names, but someone told me in India, who works for the government, that there were grants given. Millions of dollars for the poor. And hardly a few rupees get to the poor people. Practically all of it gets somehow or other usurped in the bureaucracy. When there was that starvation in Ethiopia, someone was telling me, actually somebody who studied the subject very, very carefully, a very politically active person, told me that America, UK, all these countries sent huge amounts of food and clothes and medicines to the people of Ethiopia who were inland starving to death, dying of diseases which are easily cured. And you know what he said? He said most of these companies, they just sent it for tax write-offs. They didn't really care about the people at all. They just wanted tax breaks for giving in charity. And how does he know for sure? Because about 90% of all the stuff that was sent is still sitting at the docks, month after month after month. Nobody cares to actually make the endeavor of bringing it to the people. That's a problem. No compassion. No spirituality. So the greatest thing that we can do, because there's so few people who are actually trying to solve the problem of spiritual poverty in this world. And Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, his guru, they said there are many philanthropists in this world. But who is giving pure unalloyed devotional service? That is para upakar. It is the greatest, supreme most welfare work for suffering beings, to give pure love of God, the means to attain it, through the chanting of God's name and the proper lifestyle. Does that answer your question? Adivo, thank you. Yes, Prabhu. Did everyone hear his question? He is saying that he often has questions, but he's afraid to ask. Is that false ego? Maharaj Parikshit asked many questions. But there were hundreds of great personalities who assembled. They didn't speak a word. They just listened. And they all got all their questions answered also. So whether you're the one asking the questions, or whether you're eager to hear Srimad Bhagavat class, Bhagavad Gita class, whether you're eager to read Srila Prabhupada, the Vaishnava literatures, that eagerness to hear is inquiring submissively, whether you are the one who are personally asking the questions or someone else. Really, when we read Bhagavad Gita, we're just listening to Arjuna ask questions and the answers to Arjuna. And any of us who read that, we will become enlightened just as Arjuna. And we're not even asking. Srimad Bhagavatam we're reading and we're hearing about the questions of Shonaka Rishi and the sages of Naimasharanya. And he's explaining this, the questions of Maharaj Parikshit to Sukadeva Goswami. And he's explaining the questions of Vidura to Maitreya Rishi. And just by hearing the dialogue, we become purified. So if you have a serious question and you're afraid to show your weaknesses, then that may be a type of false ego. But you may also just be a little shy. But that's all right. As long as you're eager to hear. Actually, for the first many years I was a devotee, I never asked a single question in class. Because I was shy. So I asked one of my authorities, I said, you're supposed to inquire submissively, but I don't ask questions. He says, but you come to class and you're eager to hear. That is inquiring submissively. If you have a question, then you can ask. Otherwise, you don't have to artificially think of questions. Actually, that could be false ego. Some people ask questions just to show everybody how much they know to ask such a good question. Sometimes when we're in universities and colleges, people ask these questions, which are more elaborate than the class. And really, they're asking the question just to show everybody how much they know. Haribo. Most important thing is that we're eager to hear. Just the fact that you're sitting here means you're asking a question. You're eager to inquire into the absolute truth. Otherwise, there's so many hundreds of millions of alternatives to being here tonight in the world. Is there not? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes it happens that we are trying to be humble, but in a sense that to help that person to help the devotee. But in the meantime, it happens that they take it for granted and then
So what is your question?
So how do we differentiate when not to be humble and when not to be
humble? Dhananjay Prabhu is asking a very common question. Sometimes you're humble and people exploit you and take advantage of your humility. So he's asking when to be humble and when not to be humble. Yes? You should always be humble. But you have to learn the proper process of being humble. Being humble doesn't mean necessarily letting people exploit you. Real humility is based on real intelligence. Actually, we shouldn't mind if somebody exploits us, if they're exploiting us for Krishna. But if somebody's exploiting us for their sense gratification, then we're not helping that person. And we're wasting our own time. So that is not real humility. We shouldn't be artificially, superficially humble. Anyone can just bow down and say, I'm your servant, and do all the gestures of humility. But real humility means an actual desire to serve. Prabhupada was humble sometimes when he was coming down like a thunderbolt to chastise us. That was pure, unalloyed humility, because he was doing what was required to help us, to save us. We see great acharyas are often very bold, but that's humility, because they have no selfish material ambition. They're doing it really in a spirit of selfless service. That is humility, not just false artificial humility. So we must be really humble, and that means to have a real service attitude and an actual understanding of how I could best serve in a particular situation. So you may have to inquire from people how to deal with particular situations with real humility. But you should always be humble. Should we have kirtan or continue questions? Today is Radha Ramanji's birthday. Where is Radha Ramanji? Please stand up, Prabhu. May you never take birth again. One uses his human birth for the service of the Supreme Lord, then actually his birth is auspicious. And thus, any opportunity to honor and to appreciate such a devotee is a great benediction. Radha Ramanji, we're very much pleased and grateful for your sincere years of endeavoring and even struggling to remain faithful to the path of pure love. Thank you. We shall have vote. Whether you would like to have kirtan or continue questions and answers. How many would like to continue questions and answers? How many prefer to have Sankirtan? Amrita, you have a good view of the assembled Vaishnavas. This is an example of humility. Should we take another vote? If it's even, we'll have questions and answers for a few more moments, and then we'll have kirtan. Another question? Yes, Mataji.
When Prabhupada Maharaj was in the room, his mother, his through the national merit movement. Well, it appeared to me that they were actually there for 100,000 years because she got pregnant before Vanakash could enter their service. But Narada Muni was cursed not to stay in any place longer than 3 days. Where did they stay?
Perhaps this was before he got cursed. Arivo. Is there any other questions? Yes? I couldn't hear you. You should speak very loud.
But as we start taking the process of Krishna consciousness seriously, we often tend to see that the activities that are in our heart, which is all the arathas, they come in front of us. And often then we find that when we're doing our sadhana, those are very disturbing to the mind. Because on the one side, we believe that those are not good, but we are made aware that they exist in our heart.
Performing sadhana is like being on a battlefield. Many of the enemies of our anarthas will come before us during sadhana. And the way we overcome those enemies is by putting our attention on our sadhana. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalamastaram. Krishna says, whenever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must keep bringing it back to the self. So what is the battle during japa? It's like a Kurukshetra going on in our heart. Do any of you have that experience? As we're chanting the holy names, so many distractions come before us, anarthas, certain pride, certain lust, certain anger, certain aspirations, certain, you know, planning commissions. And whenever they come before us, how do we overcome them? Just putting our attention back in the holy name. Putting our attention back in the Srimad Bhagavatam, putting our attention back in Krishna. When we're hearing the class, just focus on the message. When we're chanting our japa or in kirtan, just keep bringing our consciousness back. If you go on a battlefield, you can expect that you're going to find the enemy. Every time we sit down to perform our sadhana, we should know for sure so many distractions and anarthas will come up from our hearts. It's part of the cleansing process. But just keep bringing your mind back, back, back. If we're just endeavoring in that way, even if we're not very successful, if we're just endeavoring, Krishna sees that we're sincere and He blesses us, He empowers us, He purifies us. So Prabhupada's most frequent instruction to all of his disciples and all of his followers is be sincere. Be genuine. Be honest. Just keep trying without ulterior motives. Really, a simple definition of sincerity, to just keep endeavoring, even in spite of obstacles, without ulterior motives. We're performing our sadhana simply to purify our hearts. If you just keep trying to bring your mind to the holy name, Krishna is pleased. Krishna will reciprocate. Have no fear. The more you see anartas, the more you understand you require to take shelter of the medicine. That should be our reaction. Are there any other questions? Yes. There is no fear in the spiritual world. The only fear amongst devotees is to forget Krishna. This is what the great souls have expressed. Their only fear is they may forget Krishna. In this world, great souls do not fear all sorts of hazards, but they really fear forgetting Krishna. So the spiritual world is a place where everyone's always remembering Krishna. So it is a place of no fear. Fear is the basic cause of anxiety. Yes? The material existence is called Kunta, place of anxiety, because there's fear. The spiritual world is Vaikuntha. That means a place where there is no anxiety. That means there is no fear. Because we're always remembering Krishna. And if there is a fear, it will be that we forget Krishna for a moment. But that's very practically impossible, because Krishna is so attractively charming our hearts for all eternity. Yes.
Well, then if there's no fear, then why are there different lokas, which are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam?
There are different levels of... In the spiritual world?
Yeah, in the spiritual world. What if someone kills himself, commits suicide, his soul goes, he killed himself in that state, so therefore he is in that state in the spiritual world.
No. No, he will not go to the spiritual world. He will take another birth in this material world. You can only enter the spiritual world when you have pure consciousness. Spiritual world means beyond the temporary limitations of material existence. There are limited planets within unlimited universes, within material existence. And beyond that is the spiritual world. So in every planet, in every species of life, in every universe of material existence, there is anxiety and fear. But in the spiritual world, there is no anxiety and fear, because it is our natural home. There's fear and anxiety because we're foreigners in strange places, with strange bodies. But when we return home, then there's no fear. Yes.
You're talking about Krishna wanting to empower us, and I was just wondering, surely to feel Krishna's empowerment, we would feel it more when we're doing something difficult for Krishna, something that we find difficult and hard to do, and we're doing it for him. I'm just wondering, how important is it in spiritual life to be doing scary things, risky things, Krishna,
sacrificing for Krishna, and
what if you're scared to do it?
Our concern should be to do what will serve Krishna best, whether it is scary, difficult, dangerous, or whether it's very simple and comfortable and safe. We should do what will best serve Krishna, Guru and the Vaishnavas. But we have to be honest. Great personalities, they have taken tremendous risk on our behalf. But they had that spiritual stamina and faith. If we artificially try to take more risk than that, then we may actually become bewildered and lose our faith. So we have to be honest with our particular position and our level of realization. But to become a devotee, you have to take certain risks. You have to take yourself out of a comfort zone to make spiritual advancement. That's the meaning of tapasya, austerity. To be a devotee in this material world, you have to remove yourself from certain comfortable zones where people appreciate you and people like you and everything else. You have to separate yourself. You have to take risk of saying no to your senses. You have to take risk of saying no to your mind. You have to take risk of saying no to Maya's false promises. Yes? So we all have to do that. Srila Prabhupada was told by his spiritual master to give Krishna to the world in the English language. So to execute the order of his Guru Maharaj, he took all risk. And actually that is the proper understanding. To execute the order of our Guru Maharaj, we should be willing to take risks and endure inconveniences. And to the degree we're willing to do that, to that degree, we will make very rapid spiritual progress. Yes, Rasanathji, Prabhu.
Perhaps this question came up in one of the Bhagavad Gita classes last week, and I was on the Guru, properly satisfied, so I told him I'll get back to the classes. When Prabhupada is writing the purport for the verse, Mahalvam Shadjibanukhe, he actually mentions that the living entity has minute independence, because he's a party pastor. And because he has minute independence, and he misuses his freedom, that's why he comes down to the material world. So the question was, because we have this free will, and because there's also something called as destiny, because once we make our choice, we are just trying to get something. So is devotional service also something, a matter of, or when a living entity takes to devotional service, is it destiny or is it free will?
It is free will. But whatever our free will is of the past creates a destiny for the future. A person may perform agyata sukriti. That means unknowingly engaging in a devotional activity. But it takes free will to do that. Srila Prabhupada explains, if somebody appreciates any aspect of devotional service or a devotee or of God, that's the beginning of their devotional service. So it takes free will to appreciate. Yes? They utilize, this is the mercy of a devotee. A mercy of a devotee is he travels in this to somehow or other canvas for Krishna. If someone just sees a devotee and says, oh, very nice, his devotional service has begun. He has utilized, the devotee has somehow or other induced him to use his free will to say something good. Or if a person takes prasad, he doesn't even know it has anything to do with spirituality. But he tastes it and he says, oh, how nice. He used his free will to appreciate that. And by the devotee's mercy, he's appreciated Krishna's mercy. Yes? So he's destined to get the opportunity to become a devotee. So all destiny, you can't separate free will from destiny. Because 100% of all destiny of everyone is on the basis of their previous use of their free will. Correct? So if a person gives a donation, I know one man. I met him at the Rainbow Gathering. He was in India. And somehow or other, he was on his way to Taj Mahal, and the bus broke down, and he was in Vrindavan. So he didn't know where to go. So some rickshaw says, stops for him, and it was getting late, so he wanted to go somewhere. It was in the evening. Should I tell the story? It's a good story. So this rickshaw sees he's a white person. He's an American. So where else is the rickshaw going to take him? Him to Krishna Balaram Temple. Says, Angrezi Mandir. He says, I don't know. Takes him to Krishna Balaram Temple. So then he's walking around Krishna Balaram Temple, and he sees everybody's in one place. So he goes, what is this? So he goes to that place. He goes in the room. There's hundreds of devotees in that room, chanting so sincerely, crying out their hearts and crying. And he just goes, and he's just so moved by the emotion and the sincerity of this kirtan. He goes closer and closer. And he joins the kirtan, and he sees Prabhupada laying in the bed, and before his own eyes, he sees Prabhupada leave his body. He witnessed Prabhupada's disappearance while he was chanting the holy names with all the devotees. And he was on his way to the Taj Mahal. So was that destiny? It was destiny. But we should understand that he must have performed some very serious devotional activity, either earlier in this life, not knowing, or in a previous life, in order to be brought into the holy land of Vrindavan on such a supremely sacred occasion. This person's name is Glowing Feather. He never became a devotee, but certainly in his next life, some destiny is going to bring him further. Does that answer your question? Prabhu, everything is free will. Even you may be acting under the influence of material nature, but it's your free will to do so. When anger attacks you, you have the free will of surrendering or not. Yes? When envy attacks you, you have the free will of surrender. Whatever the three modes are doing, they're only acting according to your past karmas. But you have the free will of how you're going to respond to that. Whether you're just going to be a slave of your past karmas, being a slave of the three modes of material nature, or whether you're going to use your free will in another way. Even being a slave is a type of free will. Just like when you keep drinking alcohol or keep smoking cigarettes, you become addicted. By your free will, you have become addicted. Nobody's automatically addicted to cigarettes. I think every person in the world who first smokes a cigarette, it's horrible. I'm sure none of you have ever tried it. But you see a little boy, even little girls, but still, they just keep doing it because it's cool. It's cool. It's fashionable. I have to perform this severe austerity until somehow or other I come to that higher platform where I like it. Some kind of spontaneous attachment. But really, even smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol, there's a stage of, I won't call it sadhana, before you attain spontaneous attraction, ruchi. But at the beginning, it's horrible. And you just do it anyway. You torture yourself because then you know eventually it's going to become very nice like everybody else. So that's our free will. And then because we misuse our free will, we become addicted. And then our free will becomes very, very, very much exploited. But that's the destiny of our previous use of free will, that our free will is so difficult to control now. But still, you have control. Everyone could give up smoking. Everyone could give up drinking, even though it's so very, very difficult. Still, you have free will to either surrender to Krishna or surrender to Maya. And as you use your free will, it becomes easier or more difficult in the future. The more you use your free will to chant the holy names, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to associate and serve the devotees, the more you use that free will, even though it's very difficult. The mind doesn't like it. The senses do not like it. So many relatives and friends and society members think you're crazy, but still you do it. Gradually, it becomes natural. It becomes spontaneous. Becomes your way of life. Yes? But still, you have the free will to leave at any moment of every day. We always have free will. That's never, ever, ever taken away from us. Is there any other questions? Shall we have kirtan? Could someone go in the temple and ask when they'll conclude class? Because we'll have kirtan in the temple, it's better. Yes, Prabhu. You should chant at least 16 rounds with as much quality as possible. That is Prabhupada's direction. And if we have faith in Srila Prabhupada's direction, Krishna will help us. Better to develop a proper service attitude and chant 16 rounds than to be egoistic and chant hundreds of rounds. 16 is not that much. At the most, it takes about 2 hours. Yes? That means we have 22 hours to do so many other things. Let us just put our best possible concentration, attentiveness, and quality of consciousness in that 2 hours. That should be a priority of our life. We should orchestrate our whole life around that. That we can put the best possible quality in that time where I set everything else aside for Krishna in His name. If we have that sincerity, Krishna will certainly help us. And unless we have that commitment and sincerity, it's very difficult. We will easily be distracted. That's why it's important to take vows. Initiation really helps us, because when we take vows, then we should feel a sense that now I'm committed to do this. And that commitment gives us a certain type of strength to control our mind and senses from divergence and distractions. It is a very essential, foundational aspect of our spiritual life to commit ourselves. From commitment comes determination and strength. Otherwise, vyavashayatmaka buddhireke hakurunandana bahusha kahinantascha buddhayo vyavashayana. If we're not resolute in purpose, our mind goes in so many branches. But if we're resolute in purpose, if we're committed, then whatever is there, we know, I must do this. I have given my word. Haribo. Yes, Prabhu.
A question, can you define what is material nature? Is getting the basic necessity of life of material nature? Getting a good degree or getting a nice family?
Material nature essentially means Krishna's external energy. Now, ultimately, Krishna has one energy. It's like Prabhupada gives the example of electricity. Electricity is one energy. Yes? If it is put in a electric stove, it produces heat. If it is put in a refrigerator, it produces ice. So is electricity hot or cold? According to its receptacle, it manifests in a different way. So this material nature, this temporary world, essentially is spiritual. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. Because it's coming from Krishna. Everything from Krishna must be spiritual. Yes? What is material? A state of consciousness. When we do not see some things, relationship with Krishna, that is material consciousness. If you see something's relationship with Krishna and utilize that thing or identify that thing with Krishna's service, that is spiritual. Prabhupada gave example of microphone. Is microphone material or spiritual? When the Rolling Stones sing in the microphone, it's material. When the Vaishnavas sing the holy name in microphone, it's spiritual energy. This building, it was made by devotees. Of course, now it's getting a little old. But in the early 80s, devotees who just had a little bit of skill, they just came together, and every single thing you see in this entire building was just built by unskilled devotees. The whole community came up to They would build the frames, and then the men, the women, the children, everyone would just push the frame up. And then the people who knew a little about hammering nails would... The bathrooms and the plumbing and the temple room and the altar and the marble was all done just by hand by devotees. It's an offering of love. So they took wood, They took nails and they took marble and stone and steel, and they wanted to build a temple for Krishna. That's spiritual. Everything about this is spiritual. But as soon as you start using something for your own sense enjoyment, in ignorance of its real purpose to be used in Krishna's service, that becomes material. So everything in creation is potentially spiritual or potentially material, according to our consciousness. Does that answer your question? Krishna consciousness is the art of converting material energy into spiritual energy. Is money material or spiritual? It depends how you use it. If you use it to make an offering to the deity or to show spiritual compassion to suffering souls, then that money is Lakshmi. It's Lakshmi's energy. But if you use that money to go to Disney World, or to buy meat or cigarettes, then what is that money? It's the energy of Durga. It's the energy of Maya. So which one is it? Is it Maya's energy or is it Krishna's energy? Is it spiritual energy or material energy? Depending on your consciousness and how you use it. Is that clear? You are wearing bead bag. That is cotton. There's people on Santa Monica Beach with cotton bathing suits. So is cotton material or spiritual? For you, that cotton is spiritual. For them, that same cotton, maybe from the same cotton field, it's material. This is the power of bhakti. It can spiritualize everything, everywhere, at all times, if we have Krishna consciousness. That was Prabhupada's wish, that we use everything in this world in Krishna's service in a positive way, in a compassionate way, and transform this world into Vaikuntha. You are married, man? No? You plan to marry?
Undecided.
Undecided. That's a safe position to be in. But for those who are married, Prahlad Maharaj says a person whose household is without Krishna consciousness, it's a deep, dark well where there's so much suffering and ignorance. But then if that person changed his consciousness, Srimad Bhagavatam says, the household where the husband and the wife are both sharing devotion to Krishna, their house becomes Vaikuntha. It's the same room, perhaps with the same furniture, with the same light fixtures. And in one consciousness, it's a deep, dark well. And you're like a snake at the bottom of that well. And the same house. When you're chanting, when you're dancing, when you're using the furniture and everything for Krishna's service, it becomes Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So let us transform whatever is within our accessibility into pure spiritual energy through devotional service, which comes naturally when we become empowered by the holy name. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
What is the time? Because everyone said it at the same time, I could not understand. 8:15? So we will go for about 20 minutes kirtan in temple. And as far as going to Prabhupada's palace, because of weather and everything else, I think Prabhupada was with us here tonight. And after morning program, perhaps we can all go to Prabhupada's palace for some time. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Holiness Srila Radhanath Maharaj ki jai.